This is a Triple J podcast.
Hey, it's Dave Marchese with you for the Summer Hack Pod, and I'm so happy to revisit this chat with a guy that I had wanted to speak to for so long before I managed to get the opportunity to get him into a studio, Luke Bateman. Do you know Luke? Maybe you follow him on socials. He's the booktop guy, the farmer slash former footy player who became the darling of literature-loving circles and social media groups. But then there's also been some controversy too. You got a book deal and people were saying, oh, did he deserve that book deal? Should he have got it? Luke is fascinating because his life story has so many chapters, like a book. He was obviously a rugby league player. He was with the Canberra Raiders for years. And when we started to chat about his history, he all of a sudden started to open up about other different things that impacted him, his mental health over the years, and then specifically a gambling addiction. Now, gambling is something we have been covering a lot on Hack over the past few years, and it's relevant because there's been political debate about it. There's a lot of pressure on the federal government to announce some reforms in terms of gambling. And so I was keen to hear more about Luke's experience, and this chat took a very unexpected turn when we started to speak about what is going through the minds of young, impressionable football players when they're in that world, earning a lot of money and losing a lot of money. And Luke lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's a really, really intriguing, compelling chat, and Luke's a great guy. His voice alone is worth listening in for. Beautiful, deep radio voice. I'm a bit jealous, I've got to say. Here's my chat with Luke Bateman. Luke Bateman, welcome to Hack.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Lots of...
You're very loose with the term social media sensation. I'm not sure that's how I'd classify myself.
I don't know. Well, that was actually my first question, Luke, because there are a lot of descriptions of you. You don't describe yourself as a social media sensation. How do you describe yourself?
Oh, mate, I honestly would just describe myself as a human being trying to get through each day in the best way possible.
It's a simple description for a simple man.
Oh, mate, I always say to people, like, I understand it, but I come with a lot of labels, like ex-NRL player or ex-reality TV star or this or that. But I always say, like, labels are so minimizing to people. How can you sum the multitudes that somebody is to sum it up with, you know, two or three words? I always find very diminishing of humanity.
No, that's a fair point. And I mean, do you think that has stopped you in the past from revealing other parts of yourself because there's been so much attention on one part of your life, if that's a footy player or you being on reality TV?
Mate, 100%. I mean, for so long, I was always like trying to live up to the character that I thought other people saw me as and sort of what I needed to be.
What was life like growing up for you, Luke? Because you did grow up on a cattle station in Western Queensland, is that right?
Yeah.
Did you feel like you had a lot of support being who you were growing up?
Oh, mate, I love my childhood. Like, truly, I wouldn't take anything back. We were always on the farm doing things, and we had a little bush bash. We used to drive around and footy in town and whatnot. Would I say that I was allowed to be who I was? Like, absolutely. But there were things where I definitely thought, I don't really want to allow that part of myself to shine because that's not what I see around me in the men and the other boys around me. Like, I don't see those same things. So I think that's where, like, I always felt a bit weird because I was always like, this is a part of me that I don't see in other people around me. So I'll feel shame around being weird or being different.
And where did the love of books come from?
My mum was like, she first started the love of reading with me and my siblings. So every single night we used to have like story time before bed where mum would read us a book. And then once I could read, I just loved reading. I probably had a natural affinity towards it. Having such a large imagination in my mind, I think reading like fantasy novels was just such a outlet for me and such an escape for me. And it was brought me so much joy to be able to dive into these stories. And I used to always, like, when I'd read books, I would be the main character of the book. So it was a way for me to sort of live my my fantasies.
Yeah, I love that you wrote recently that you found a lot of role models within books, like some of the best role models in the world are made up characters. That sounds like it was quite a beautiful experience that these characters were more than just descriptions on a page for you. They were people helping guide you through life.
Oh, mate, absolutely. I say this to people all the time. Like, when I read books, it's like I'm hanging out with my friends. And there's some, especially obviously with like epic fantasy, when you have series that can go from anywhere from like 5 to 30 books, you know, when you've read 30 books with the same characters, you really do develop a friendship with them. So there were lots of things about them and their characteristics and their strength and perseverance and all that kind of stuff and overcoming hardships. I really wanted to be that person that could do that.
When you got older, like in your teen years and finishing high school, were you still as open about reading and wanting to be surrounded by books and book culture?
Not really. And I was always very secretive about my reading publicly. I read a lot at home because wasn't seen as different or wrong or anything.
No shame.
But yeah, there was no shame around it at home. So I read very privately. And even now, like as a 30-year-old, like within the past 6 to 12 months is actually my first entry into broader reading and book community and culture. So I spent the first, 29, 30 years of my life like with reading as my deepest passion, but not being involved in any sort of community because, you know, playing football, no slight on them, but reading and emotional depth and magic and fantasy are not very popular subjects or talking points in those spaces.
You got into footy in a big way as a young guy. Obviously, you played for the Canberra Raiders and the NRL for years. You're in a pretty unique position as a professional athlete, I guess, because often you do retire from that massive part of your life quite early on, and you did a few years ago. When you reflect on your NRL career now, how do you look back at it? Is it with a lot of fondness, or you know, is there stuff there that you didn't like? What do you reflect on most?
Firstly, mate, that's a really, really good question, and I really appreciate it. Not a question I get asked very often, actually. I don't really look back on it very fondly, to be honest. But I look back on it now through the lens of a 30-year-old man who's very different to the sort of 18, 19-year-old who entered professional sports. I've got a lot more experience and a lot more understanding behind me now to look back at it. But I think it's hard for me because a lot of the worst times of my life happened while I was playing football. And while I don't blame football per se for everything, because I take ownership and responsibility, it's not a culture or an industry that really develops mature, wholesome, integrated men, in my opinion. There are a lot of parts of the industry that are very corrosive to young men that aren't prepared mentally to be exposed to.
What parts specifically?
I think the culture of football, and especially once you get to a professional level, it really becomes about win at all costs. And any price you have to pay to win, cheating, breaking rules, lying, like whatever you have to do to win is justified. And when you're a part of a culture like that, and a very, very ruthless culture that is very, I would say, devoid of virtue and morals, it really seeps into who you are as a person. Like, you can't be involved in that all day, every day. When it's your life, especially when you're a professional sportsman, when that is your life, attack, attack, attack. Well, it really forced me to discard key parts of my soul that were unaligned with those values.
So you felt like you changed a bit while you were in that environment?
Oh, absolutely. I became someone who I didn't like, that had some severe repercussions and took me many years to process and alleviate. The off-field culture of footy is very immature. That was something else that I probably wasn't that exposed to. When you grow up around, you know, farmers and men who spend 7 days a week working, and then you sort of go into a culture where It's, you know, a lot of money and a lot of spare time, a lot of drinking and partying. It was a very hard thing for a young sort of country boy to adjust to.
Your NRL career ended with a knee injury, Luke. How hard was that at the time?
At that time in my life, my knee injury was like the bottom of the list of my problems, which is funny to say. But
what was at the top of your list?
Oh, the top of my list was a depression and addiction. In 2019 was when I did my knee, and that was the straw that broke the camel's back for me, really, because at that time I was struggling with addiction, depression, just general lack of direction, purpose, or joy in life. And then the knee injury came. I was off contract. And that just, it all just became one big vortex of pain and misery for me. So the knee injury was just part of a much bigger piece. But I look back at it now, it was really difficult at the time, don't get me wrong. But it was kind of a blessing in many ways, because the knee injury really bringing about the end of my career actually gave me the opportunity to get out of that industry and remove myself from that culture and give me the space to, I suppose, process and heal and actually work on myself. And I don't know whether I would have had the same desire or the same opportunity if I had have remained in that space.
So you were battling with this depression and gambling addiction at the same time. At the worst of that time, like, what did your life look like when you were so far into gambling?
Oh, mate, I was just in a haze. I was happy. Like, I spent 12, 18 months of my life during that period. Yeah, it was probably 18 months of my life where I look back and I don't remember a lot of it, because I was on autopilot every day, and it was just wake up and just in a fog every single day, and just on autopilot, and you're just doing whatever I could to whatever was required of me just to maintain some sense of normality, so that I just had this construct of, as long as everybody else around me thinks that I'm still holding it together or I'm still leading a normal life, then like that's all good. Just very, very sad, mate. Very sad.
Is it really easy for players, you know, in NRL communities, footy communities generally, to get into gambling? Like, is it something you noticed a lot in your peers as well?
Oh, mate, 100%. I would say half of the football team had gambling addictions, probably not to the severity that I had it. But yeah, I think gambling was what you did, like as an 18-year-old. That's what we went and did when we, like, as a football team, when we had spare time, it was like, well, let's go to the races or let's go down to the pub and have a beer and a bet. You know, I just developed those behaviours. And then when I had larger issues come up, those behaviours obviously deepened or accelerated at the same rate that my pain accelerated.
And at this point, I mean, you were in this like lucky position of having been earning a lot of money. You must have been just losing a lot of money too.
Dave, do you want to talk about how much money I lost?
Well, if you want to reveal it, I mean.
Oh, mate, I would have, over the space of probably, I reckon, 2 or 3 years, I would have lost $500,000.
Wow.
Yeah. I was earning $400,000 a year in the NRL, and I was broke. My mum was paying my mortgage. Like, I couldn't buy groceries, mate, because I literally had no money. I was earning $400,000 a year, and I couldn't buy groceries. It was debilitating and horrible. The accountability and the ownership of that lies solely upon me.
Do you think it really does rely only on you? Because, like, right now there's this big discussion about gambling reforms, and there are calls for a ban on gambling ads and other kind of incentives that might draw young men in particular into this really destructive culture. Do you feel like there does need to be changes in that space?
100%. My biggest problem was that I had a bookie on my phone. If I had to go to a race course or I had to go to a tab, if I had to be there physically, I never would have developed a gambling addiction. When you're playing footy, you know, we could have been done by lunchtime. And so you literally go home, eat your lunch, and then you got the whole afternoon to yourself. So you sit down, chuck on the races, and you're sitting on the couch at home, 1 o'clock in the afternoon watching the races, and it's Tuesday afternoon, you can lose a couple of thousand in a couple of hours, you know. That I think that's a massive issue.
The convenience of
just the convenience of it, mate. I said, like, if I had to literally go down, get cash out, go into, like, see someone or go to a race course and put the bet on myself, mate, it wouldn't have ever been an issue for me. Just the pure convenience of it, unregulation around. Because there's no limit on, if you've got $100,000 and you want to deposit $100,000, mate, you can do that in an afternoon, you know. So it's, I think that that's a real issue, just the convenience and the ease of it. It made it super easy for me to be very secretive about it as well, because I could have been at an event, I could have been at a wedding, you know, and I could be sitting at a table at a wedding and putting a bet on. It's, you know, you're on your phone, someone might think you're just sending a text or whatever and you just put a $10,000 bet on.
It's this really interesting situation you're in, because we know there's already so much stigma around gambling and people struggle to reach out for help. You're in this position where a lot of your peers are doing it too. So it's really normalized. It's not like you're this outsider, but also you've got so much money behind you. I wonder whether that makes it hard reaching out for help, because you're worried people are going to think, well, you should be rich. What's your problem?
Yeah, like, mate, 100%. Yeah, I think, and that's a real issue around, I think a lot of issues with males is the shame around it. And that's not just with gambling. We feel so much shame around so many different things, but especially if you're gambling, and as you said, you're someone who should be wealthy and you've got no money, the shame that you feel around that really is very debilitating towards your ability to ask for help, because you, as you said, you think to yourself, I can't go tell someone that I've got no money, or I can't go ask for money or for help, because I'm on $100,000 a year. So what are they going to think of me?
How did you get help, Luke? Because you went to rehab, right?
Yeah, mate. I went to rehab. I went to rehab in 2021, 18 months to 2 years after, like, things got really, really bad. So 2019 was where I really, like, really fell apart in all aspects of life. And at the end of 2019, there was about 6 months where I just was a complete wreck and wouldn't allow any help and just sort of tried to do things on my own and just got worse and worse and worse. And then at the end of 2019 was when I actually got to the point where I said, no, this goes sort of one or two ways, and it either ends up with, you know, me in a coffin or I get help. Like, that's the only two options that I have left. I've ridden this train to the end of the track. Every time rehab got brought up, I was always very much like, no, like, I can't do that. Like, I'm not doing that, because if people knew that me, you know, a successful man that young kids probably looked up to, or I'm a role model, like, I can't be someone who goes to rehab.
That's heavy stuff, Luke. I mean, a lot of people would have found themselves in similar situations. I'm sure there are people listening now who maybe are going through it. I mean, you come out of rehab and you've obviously done a good job at putting your life back together. But then on the other side of that, you're on The Bachelor in 2023. I mean, that is a massive reintroduction into public life and just the world of celebrity. What was that like?
My Bachelor experience was actually very, very fulfilling in many ways. It's not something that I would do again, and not out of any spite or anything like that. And I had a lot of fun with it. To be completely honest, nobody watched my season, so it wasn't any form of celebrity or anything like that. Because no one watched it and it got canned. So
I'm overselling a lot in this interview, aren't I? Media sensation, global Bachelor celebrity. Yeah. You're like, oh.
I'll get more views on my reel than the whole season of The Bachelor, mate.
Maybe it was better. Maybe it was better that way in the long run. Who knows?
I'm actually quite grateful that no one did watch it. It's another one of those, I suppose, labels. I'm glad people don't know me for that, because it's not really a label that I'd like to wear around.
You've got all these different chapters of your life, if we're going to use a book analogy. You've got all these different chapters of your life and, you know, The Bachelor might have been a small one, but it's in there. It's a short chapter. Yeah. Then we go into this current realm that you're in. You've got this whole new life as this book ambassador. Whether you like it or not, that's what you are. Do you love that role?
Mate, absolutely. You know, I have been known for a few different things throughout my life, but it's really meaningful and brings me a lot of joy to be most well known for something that I like, the one thing that I actually am passionate about. Playing football was something I enjoyed, but it wasn't who I was. And being the bachelor was something that I did. It's not something who I am. Whereas books and reading and stories and magic is genuinely like who I am in my soul.
Was it also, did you feel really vulnerable opening up so publicly about this part of your life? Were you ever second guessing it and thinking, oh, should I be doing this?
With everything that happened, you know, I'd been on a large sort of like healing journey and so joyful in my life. And I just had so much peace, you know, so much peace. And then I just got to the point where I was like, oh, I just want friends to talk about books with, because I'm just at the point where I don't care. Like I just want to be me. Like I just want to live as me, and I'm more than happy to talk about it. I have the courage and the ability to talk about it now. And the one thing I love is magic and books. And I just want friends to talk about that with. And my friend said to me, she said, oh, you should jump on Book Talk. And I was like, what is Book Talk? And she said, oh, it's like this subsection of TikTok where all they do is talk about books. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. Because I would have never, ever talked about it on Instagram, because everyone on Instagram at that point was mainly from like all the people from my past, all the people that I knew, all the like my footy mates, you know. And that was, and I still, even at that point as a 30-year-old, like I would have never, like the only reason that I was courageous enough to do it on TikTok was because I knew that none of my football mates were like sort of on there, like no one. And
which
then,
is kind of funny, really.
Which is funny
TikTok
because
TikTok is like the biggest platform out there.
Then my very first video like had 2 million views in a week or two. And every single one of my footy mates is messaging me. And it's really, and it's quite funny actually, because I actually, man, I genuinely, like I copped a bit of flack from footy blokes.
What kind of flack? What happened?
Oh, but like, I mean, as you can expect, like real nerd I see, mate, sort of thing. Or like just the sort of jabs between what you would sort of think of as friends, but truly not really people that should be considered friends.
Yeah. Has this helped to flush out some of the friends? You're like, actually, you don't support me. You don't support me.
I've really been interesting over the past sort of 6 months to see who genuinely just wants joy and success and happiness for you. Mm. And then who were those friends who you see like the jealousy, or you feel like you see the jealous or sarcastic remarks. You know, I write poetry and I'll share poetry online. And I remember one of my group chats, one of the boys like chucked my poem in the group chat and took the piss out of me. And I was just sort of like, you know, that's, they're probably not really the kind of people that I want in my life.
That's not right.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about that kind of negative response from those outside of Book Talk, that world. But I guess there's also Book Talk where not all the commentary can be positive. There can be some negative stuff too. And when you secured this book deal, there was this debate online that kind of kick-started about whether you deserved it as someone who'd never written before. Was that really hard?
It wasn't enjoyable. But
fair enough.
I wouldn't say I was doing cartwheels. Like I'm a very, very compassionate person and very understanding person. And as I said, like with what I've been through, you know, I can't judge anybody. And I also understand just through my own personal journey that I don't know other people. Mm. And for someone to, I think, you know, it was very easy for people to look at me and say, oh, this bloke has never written and he's just like blown up online and now he's got a book deal. But people don't know anything about me. Like I've written since I was a kid. I started writing in primary school. Like when I was in high school, I entered short story competitions. I journal all the time. I write poetry. I started writing my book before Book Talk or before any sort of online traction. I started writing my book as a passion project for myself. Mm. So I understood the commentary around it. What really was interesting to me was that all these people were saying things about me without knowing anything about me. Like no one actually came to me and said, hey, Luke, like tell us your story. But as I said, a very, very, very understanding and empathetic person. And I understand that everyone has a story. So many people want those stories told. And when they've been trying for so long to have their story told, and then they see someone else who from their point of view, has that fall in their lap. In a sense, I was kind of like, hey, I understand this anger. And even though you're angry at me, I'm one of you.
I know that you're really into fantasy, and that's a genre that, you know, a lot of guys, boys might be into, but you do kind of embrace a lot of other genres. I'm wondering, do you think we need to be encouraging boys particularly, but also men, to be reading different kinds of books?
I'm so passionate about reading, but books are knowledge, and knowledge is power. And books have the ability to change lives and change societies. And when you open yourself up to all range of genres and you gain the experience and the knowledge that all of those vast, vast different voices and different stories bring to you, that gives you so much more ability in your own life to apply those lessons and those wisdoms. Reading is just like a thing that every single human being should do.
How is the writing going?
Oh, incredible. Incredible, mate. I actually hate the fact that I have to work, because I spend all day thinking about writing, and all I want to do is just get home and write. That is, yeah, it's going awesome. I'm probably a little bit over 2/3, and I'm hoping, we were originally slated to publish in January 2027, which is when we've got it set for, but I would like to hopefully do it next year.
Is it going to be good, Luke?
Oh, mate. I think it's awesome. And my mum, I send her every chapter when I finish it. My mum thinks it's really good. So,
in breaking news, Luke's mum thinks exactly. He did a good job of writing. No, that's a good sign. I'm sure she's a good critic. I'm sure mum's a good critic.
She actually would. She actually would tell me if shit. Like, I really, really hope that men and women enjoy, like adult men and women enjoy it. But I really, really want young men to read it and enjoy it as well.
Do you know what the next chapter is going to look like? Are you happy on the farm? What do you want to be doing?
I don't know. Don't get me wrong. I love working in agriculture, but I do definitely want to be able to step into work that probably creates larger change. Like, I feel very called to help uplift other people and help support other people. And I'm not exactly sure what the future holds, but whatever it is, I know that it'll be helping people.
Well, look, maybe in a small way, you've done that today, and I'm sure a lot of people would have been listening to this and have taken away so much. Luke Bateman, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you very much for speaking with us on Hack.
Oh, no, thank you, mate. Thank you very much for having me.
Summer Hack on Triple J.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed that chat as much as I did. Luke Bateman has a pod out now where he's reviewing all kinds of books. You can go follow him on socials as well. Probably doesn't need the follows. He's already got he's already a massive influencer in this world, but he's definitely got lots of updates when it comes to books and reads a varied range of genres. You can't really pigeonhole Luke into one category because he's reading everything. Just a reminder, if this chat did raise any concerns for you, you can always call the National Gambling Helpline on 1800 858 858. Lifeline is always there too on 13 11 14. That is all we've got time for on the Summer Hack podcast today. We're going to have another episode for you on Saturday, so keep an eye out for that one. For now, see ya. Hack.